I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Place to go. 6:11, here we go, brand new week. No place. Show number 1259. Welcome to 303 East Wacker. Greatest radio studio in the world. As I look over my left shoulder, yep, the lake is still there.
High atop the mouth of the Chicago River. How about that?
There's a little bit of an orange glow.
To me or to the lake?
Well, both, actually. Okay.
You're talking about this studio, this address in particular. There's a video on our website at WGMradio.com from Pepper Construction. Our boss Todd is featured, and Bill Murdoch, our head engineer, talking about what...
Arguing about what this place would be?
Well, just how what thought went into building it out.
The architecture firm was, I don't know if they won, but they were nominated for a big architecture award. I think it's the Mike Brady Award.
Yeah. I think they won.
The Mr. Brady Award. Mr. Brady, the architect from the Brady Bunch.
We lost the plans.
Yeah. Anyway, if you go to our website, you can watch the video and you can see every part of our studio and why it is the way it is.
And every listener should come by here. Yeah. I mean, not all at once. I mean, you know, it's kind of tight. But it's cool.
One of the things our boss says in it is that it reminds you, this place reminds you, you better think about new ideas while honoring the ideas that came before.
Well, that's very nice. But I would also include... If you have a chance when one company is being sold to another, take them to the cleaners when it comes to the budget for a new place. Huh? That's what I would say. Because they spent a lot of money on this joint. Good for them. All right, let's do it. Top 6 at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Good morning, Sinclair Broadcast. So close.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, two just ridiculously awful fires, one in Southern California, one in Northern California, and 30, at least 30 dead, 200 missing as the wildfires of California rage. And you'll see a lot more about it today in places you wouldn't normally see it necessarily, because a bunch of celebrity homes have burned to the ground now. And I would guess Dean and I will be talking about that later on. But anyway, the 1933 fire was the deadliest in California history. We're now at that number. And sadly, the number is likely to go up.
Yeah, there's 200 plus people unaccounted for.
So that's beyond awful.
Very concerning, that number, 218. As a matter of fact, in several places in California, they've set up mobile mortuary sites, right, complete with DNA analysis. The fear is that that 30 number was going to go much higher.
And well, thousands and thousands and thousands of homes gone.
Yep. Some of the people have perished trying to leave the fire in their car, so it's awful.
When Spike Odell's house burned, Dave, I don't know if you ever made it out there, but I live fairly close to him, and I went by his house, and he had such a great attitude about it, he and Karen both. But to walk through somebody's house that's, you know, the shell was still standing, but to walk through somebody's house, it's gone. You think about all the memories, all the stuff that was there, all the stuff that isn't there anymore, times thousands and thousands and thousands. So empathy would come in handy, not just from the president, but everybody else. So, you know, thank God it's the majority have survived by a long shot. But, you know, the psychological damage of this goes on for lifetimes. Moving on, next. 100 years ago, the Chicago Tribune's front page blared the headline at 1:55 in the morning that World War I had ended. It was the second time in a week that Chicago was told the war had ended, but this time it was real. Crowds hit the streets. This is before, the internet by a few years, and before alerts on your phone by a few years. So it was the words of your neighbors, and when the first newspapers hit the streets. Early in that morning, and the second armistice celebration was on 100 years ago yesterday. Correct? Was it yesterday?
Uh-huh. Yes.
I think it was yesterday.
They said they sounded an alarm. So I guess I've I don't recall alarms ever going off when wars have ended. Like when
I think I could be wrong about this, and nobody's alive to know this, but and World War II is maybe similar. If there was a concern about an invasion or an air raid, celebration, alarms would go off.
Yeah.
So people knew that it was time to go outside. An amazing, amazing, amazing accomplishment, and everybody thought, well, this will never happen again. And 30 short years later, it was just a couple years after World War II ended. We're lucky to be in the position we're in now, but it's impossible not a day after Veterans Day to keep in mind that Afghanistan has been going on for almost 18 years.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
That is, that's hard to believe, yeah.
Next. A little fight, if you will, between Macron and Donald Trump in Paris. It seems to have settled down. Weekend celebrations of the end of World War One, as you might remember or know from your history class, France being among the epicenters, an awkward exchange of, let's just say ideas between President Trump and the other world leaders. Whatever comes down from this is hard to say. Meanwhile, on kind of the other side of the world, North Korea has now been outed for redoing missile sites all over North Korea. And dismantling one. They're like a little kid. Go, no, Mom, I cleaned my room and everything's in the closet. So that nightmare is continuing. And when somebody tells you that everything's fine and we're getting along with North Korea, North Korea's great, nah, not so much. Attention exists.
I mean, it's so obvious and it's probably not new, but the isolationist style of the Trump administration played out in France is... World leaders got together for photos and the walk along the river and everything that was happening. Trump wasn't a part of it.
Yeah.
And so much came out this weekend about the feeling that it's, I think David Axelrod said, obviously partisan politics, but he said it's America first is more like America alone. And it has this feel to that, especially since, you know, it was a different kind of president. We didn't see him so boisterous and so confident and so over the top and talking, trying to muscle himself to the front of the room. Instead, he was almost a forgotten part of celebration. That's crazy to think about.
Great mistake that's being made is that the ego of this country and of this particular president is we don't need anybody else. Yeah. I hate to break it to you. We need the world, too. Yes, we're the leader of the free world, and the free world needs us, but we need help from other countries, strategic and otherwise, in other parts of the world. Next. Oh, isn't this sweet? Blake Shelton said to his girlfriend, Gwen Stefani, from the stage at the People's Choice Awards, that's his all-time favorite coach right there. Love her. I hope he said love her and was supposed to love ya.
He said love her. He said it adorably. Carson Daly was trying to outdo his love for his girlfriend. Carson kept trying to step on Blake's toes there.
Isn't Carson married?
Yeah, but they accepted the award together. So I see. Okay. You know, they were just... He said, I'm going to thank Gwen first, and then Blake jumped in.
Look, I like Blake Shelton, so I have to assume that my feud with Gwen Stefani is over. I have to assume that she's changed since 1996 and the incident that I had with her. So she is no longer a terrible person.
All right, good to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a relief.
I'm sure she is really relieved.
An anxious nation can now exhale. Next, congratulations, Dave Ennett. Northwestern Wildcats, Big Ten West Division champs, first time ever.
Yeah.
Well, don't congratulate me, but congratulate Coach Fitzgerald and those kids because, man, I'll tell you what, everybody keeps saying, yeah, but they rank here in rushing offense and this, and they don't score many points. It's all about winning, and all they've done, and how about this? We talked a lot about the Bears not beating a divisional opponent. It's been over a calendar year since Northwestern lost a road game.
It's tremendous.
They won 7 in a row on the road.
It's tremendous.
Yeah. It is really remarkable.
Now, have you made your plans for Indianapolis? I heard you talking to Ted at the end of the game. Ted apparently had a dinner party you weren't invited to.
Yes. Oh, you did hear that,
yes,
didn't you? Yeah. Yeah, he had a holiday party. I didn't get an invite.
At his house.
Yeah, at his house.
That he now was can't hosting, go to.
So he has to cancel.
The Cats put themselves in a great spot here because they now play the championship game in the Big Ten, which would probably be Ohio State or Michigan. And both those teams would be on one of those teams is going to be on a whirlwind to get into the playoffs.
Right.
and they could play spoiler. I mean, they could be in a spot where they knock off a Big Ten team from going to the college conference.
Yeah, but it's more than that, Justin, because they win, they go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, first time since 95. That's much better incentive, I think, than worrying about spoiling somebody else's
game.
And
yeah, I love it.
I still have the Gary Barnett era logo that I can pull out at any time. Yeah,
you can break out your starter shirt again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Super Joe is in the producer's booth, as always. I apologize that Justin mentioned Ohio State as a possible winner over Michigan.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he mentioned that team first. That's
I'm not
weird.
Sure either. He regrets it.
I also learned in the office that I mentioned something to Super Joe about Michigan playing Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game, and I was shut down quickly about we aren't ready to declare that. Like
Joe is taking us one game at a time.
Yeah, we do not talk about this. I learned. So
yes,
I already made that mistake.
Next.
Go Cats.
Thank goodness for Cody Parkey. Thank goodness for Cody Parkey. Cody Parkey did something yesterday, the Bears kicker, that's impossible. He hit the upright on four kicks.
How
four
great
kicks.
Is that?
Tim, it's nearly impossible.
It
if
is.
You gave him 200 footballs and said, hit it twice, I don't know that he could.
He said
do
he couldn't. He said he
four
wouldn't be able to. No kicker could.
In a row. If you had four in a row, you're a rich man this morning. Now, here's why I said thank goodness for Cody Parkey. The Bears won in a commanding performance, a dominant performance. And I thought, I am worried about Hamp and OB.
Yes.
They're going to have
they
nothing to bitch about.
Right. They need something.
They got it. They got it. They can talk about the
they
kicker.
They found some other things, too,
I'm sure. They did, too. But Hamp will be on with us in an hour. Nothing makes Hamp happier than kickers who should be killed.
Well, that's true.
Yes, that's right. So Cody Parkey, as far as we know, is going to keep his job, but he had a rough day.
They're not bringing in another kicker. That's what Matt Nagy said after the game.
So I don't think that's been done in the history of the NFL. So
I don't think so either.
Bears making
in the history of uprights. 6:22, it's coming up at 6:30, because that's your top six at six.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
We will get to the headlines in just a second. In regards to the Chicago Blackhawks, they have an opportunity this week to get healthy. They got four games in the next 7 days, 6 days actually. And of those four games, only tonight against Carolina are they playing a team that's cooking. Or I shouldn't say that. Only next Sunday against Minnesota are they playing a team that's doing well. Carolina's struggling. The Blues are struggling. The Kings are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Next Sunday they'll get to the Wild. So if they could take three out of four, and by the way, they have to. Yeah. I know it's early, but taking three out of four would snap them out of this funk and get them rolling in the right direction again. Corey Crawford might be able to play a little bit better. Cam Ward might be able to play a little bit better, but they need help.
They played tonight at Carolina, Wednesday at home against the Blues.
Right.
And you mentioned the Kings on Friday. And then
and the Wild.
And the Wild. So, yeah, I mean.
Three out of four. I mean, four out of four would be great, but I'll take three out of four.
Just get a win.
You want to start with one?
Start with one.
Okay. If you want. Headlines next.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Is Northwestern Medicine BP called Dr. Most right now?
Doctor. Kevin Most.
Most doctor.
Joins us
most
live. Thank you for that, Doc. Good morning. You're sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Thank you. Thank
good.
You.
Good.
Let's jump right in here, because we always take the opportunity to talk about what's ailing you. We got into a bit of a discussion about addiction, but really couldn't do it justice. So you want to pick that up?
Yeah, you know, we always try to highlight things that are in the news. And I think one of the things that we avoid, and I'm not saying I avoid, you avoid, but just us in public, I'll say, or the general population, is we stay away from addiction because of the social stigma with it, and we kind of feel like, oh, that doesn't feel comfortable talking about it. And yet people have to realize that it's a medical condition that everyone has an opportunity to make an impact well beyond what a physician can make, actually.
And you and I both know people in the program, and your friend and my brother, Mickey, now sober for 15 years, is just one example of the millions of people out there who have beaten it. You have to decide to save your own life, and you have to commit to the many resources that are out there, and you're going to lay some stuff out for us here.
Yeah, and, you know, and Mickey's a perfect example. He is so proud of what he has done to fight this addiction. He'll tell you exactly how many days, and he'll tell you, I mean, he called me when he hit 15 years and said, hey, 15 years, Dr. Mosta, you know, and you could just hear the pride in his voice that he shared.
Well, he should be proud. Anybody that's gone through that and goes through that, it is still a day-to-day fight, and it is for the rest of your life, and it's worth it.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things we need to get across to people. This is not, addictions are not something you go to a hospital and get into a 30-day program and then you're cured. You know, its treatment is ongoing and continues to go throughout your entire life.
All right, so as we go through this now, give us some stats.
Yeah, so I mean, I think some of the amazing stats, you know, let's talk about opioids just for a second. You know, we know there's a huge opioid crisis in this country. Well, the United States makes up 5% of the world's population, but yet we consume 80% of the opioids that are produced. That's not even saying about the illicit. So just think about that number. It's staggering.
Well, what is the sense in the medical field in, you know, as to why it's gone on that way? I mean, I know there's a million little examples, but is there some larger cultural explanation for that?
Yeah. Matter of fact, you know, go back a few years and the Joint Commission, who's a wonderful institution that makes sure that, you know, hospitals and doctors do what they're supposed to do, felt that pain was not being treated adequately. And in 2001, they said, you know what, we want a fifth vital sign. Forget about blood pressure, respiratory rate, you know, heart rate. We wanted you to address pain with every single patient. Couple that with the same thing with the pharmaceutical companies coming out with the drugs like Norco and Vicodin saying, these aren't addictive drugs. It's okay to use these in people. So doctors, unfortunately, were taking and using Norco and Vicodin for probably pain situations that they didn't because they knew where they were being measured on this. And unfortunately, we, the medical profession, have to step up and say, you know what, we're responsible for a lot of this.
And the question, too, and this was in the Frontline documentary on Dayton, Ohio, but the idea of the pharmaceutical industry having to share some responsibility in this because they knew that insurance companies would cover this drug, so they pushed it hard, and people were prescribing it because, and people were using it because it was covered by insurance.
Absolutely. And very inexpensive medications. So, yeah, Justin, you hit it right on the head. And if you saw last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess, you know, a new opioid medication came out. Normally, we would be celebrating that news because it's going to allow us to treat patients with pain. But instead, the FDA was just smashed in backlash of how could you do this? How could you approve another opioid medication knowing what we're going through in this country?
Yeah, well, needs go on, right? That's the thing. I mean, if you had one controversial cure for a cancer, you wouldn't stop working on curing cancer. So I understand why the public's upset, but you can't just shut it down.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so one of the other things that jumped out of your statistical breakdown in the notes that we post with your podcast were some of the famous names that have had opioid addictions. I mean, we could attribute Michael Jackson's death to a type of painkiller. We certainly know that Prince died that way. But I don't know about Charles Dickens.
Yeah, how about that? Charles Dickens used opiates daily.
Every day?
Yep.
It's just a month. And he died before he was 60 years old.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, go to those deaths. You know, you talk about Belushi and you talk about Dickens and Elvis Presley and Prince. Well, you know what? 100 individuals a day die from opioids. Another 250 die from alcohol abuse. That's 350 people. That's like a 747 crashing every single day.
Yeah, how about that?
And yet we really don't hear that all the time. We don't hear that in the news, and we're not pushing treatment options and research as much as we need to.
Doc, in the medical community, do you guys look at it differently when there's somebody that gets opioids on the street versus somebody who has a doctor that just keeps writing them prescriptions? Like, Prince wasn't buying them on the street corner. He had a doctor that gave him an endless supply. Like, how do you navigate those two different... They're both addiction, but one is more doctor, you know, related.
Do you grade one differently?
Yeah, we definitely do. You know, the pill mills are really what is frustrating, and those are the ones that doctors are just, you know, patients are lining up outside their office knowing that they're going to walk in and leave with a prescription. Because eventually those are the people that are going to continue that addiction out on the street, or they're selling those drugs to other individuals. So they're, quote-unquote, not buying them on the street because they're getting them from a physician. But we know that there are pill mills. You know, the state monitors us very, very closely now as far as how many prescriptions we write. We have a website that I can put in Steve Cochran in your birth date into a website, and it will tell me every pain medication or addictive medication that you've gotten. The requirement now for a doctor, before I write a prescription for any opiate, I have to go and check that website to make sure that you have not been getting it from other doctors.
Pharmacy shopping, right? That's what Rush Limbaugh was doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the sad thing is, we live within 45 minutes of two different states. The Illinois Department of Professional Monitoring, where we can go and look at up the web, is only for Illinois. I can't tell you what you got in Indiana. I can't tell you what you got in Wisconsin.
Doc, you mentioned the celebrity deaths and overdoses that could maybe help shed light on what's happening. But do we have to go deeper than that? Because I think a lot of people will look at the names that you mentioned. Steve mentioned Michael Jackson. You mentioned John Belushi. And you think of lack of willpower. You think of moral choices. The idea of addiction being something that decadence played a role because they could get it and they were sad about being celebrities, whatever it might be. But the point being that there's so many stigmas how people get addicted or how where addiction comes from. Do we have to deal with that as a society first?
Absolutely. That's probably the biggest hurdle we need to get over right now, Justin, is this is not a willpower issue. This is not because an individual is weak. This is a medical condition. When people take drugs, they get this thing called the reward circuit in their brain, and a chemical called dopamine is released. And that's why it continues to do that. It says, oh, if I take this, I'm going to get this feeling of euphoria. And it keeps telling you that to do that. So this is a chemical issue in the brain for the most part. Now, initially, the first time you take it, sometimes it's voluntary, right? No one's going to die, or no one's going to give you a prescription for cocaine. You might try it. Opiates, on the other hand, are different. Marijuana is a little bit different. But for the most part, it's that chemical reward cycle circuit that goes on in our brain that tells us, I want to do that again. I want to do that again. And that's what we need to understand. And that's what some of the medications that we're using to treat these addictions are doing.
I want to come back and we'll pick up on that, too. And why is that addiction so strong in opiates, or is it certain opiates that it's so strong anyway that people just cannot do anything but figure out how to get their next prescription filled? Talking with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. All right, Doc, so let's run through some of the lightning round stuff here. Opioids, we got much more to discuss with it, and why is it such a strong addiction?
Well, that is the unfortunate thing, is opiates are probably the most highly addictive medication that we have. You know, some estimates say you could be addicted after two or three doses. Well, think about the individual who's had surgery and is given 30 doses, 60 doses, 90 doses. So very, very highly, highly addictive, and probably the biggest one that we have a concern of right now. I can tell you, I haven't written an opiate probably in 6 months. And
really?
I've taken care of people with broken bones. You know, now we're starting to look at other alternative measures because of we know of this fear.
The irony here is you need drugs in many cases to get off drugs. And there are some amazing medications that can help stem the tide of addiction. Is antabuse, is that the alcohol one?
Yeah. So someone that, you know, often with alcohol abuse, the individual has to pretty much hit bottom because they look at it and say, hey, you know, it's legal. I can do it. Everybody's drinking. Matter of fact, there's high estimates that one out of every eight people is an alcoholic. So there's almost this social acceptance of alcohol. Individuals that hit bottom say, hey, you know what? You're going to lose your family. You're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your life. Often those individuals will say, put me in treatment. I still know I'm going to have those cravings. So I'm going to take this medicine called antabuse so that if they were to drink, if that craving got so bad that they were to drink, they become violently ill. And they'll stop drinking because of the medication that they're taking.
Yeah, because you end up having to make that choice. Yep. What's is it Naltrexone or Naltrexone and Campro?
Naltrexone, yep, it's another one. That one at least takes away some of the pleasure that people have if they're drinking. So another medication that can be used in individuals with alcohol abuse.
All right, so these drug take-back days, are they working?
Yeah, they are. Matter of fact, we just had a National Drug Take-Back Day just a couple of weeks ago at the end of October. I want to say, even here at CDH, I want to say we got 135 pounds of medication.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, we're taking back everything because it's not just opiates, but we'll take antibiotics. We'll take things. We just don't want people to throw those away
or flush
them into the water. Exactly.
Right.
But the opiates are probably the biggest one because people don't understand or under-realize that a lot of opiates that you say, oh, I'm going to save this in case I get hurt, are being stolen out of your house or used by others illegally.
Doc, what are you guys doing, though, for the people that were originally prescribed opioids because they were in pain? How are you actually helping people to get out of pain more naturally?
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate that we didn't know this years ago, because now we have other medications that we can use, other treatments that we can use, acupuncture, acupressure, believe it or not, some of those relaxation techniques, other medications that take down inflammation, which is where the cause of the pain is, versus taking away the pain. So we're starting to go back to the foundation of what caused the pain versus let's just take the pain away. And it's a new way for us to think about pain relief.
All right, so what about coke and weed? I mean, if you have this incredible spike in opioids, are there less people doing cocaine, for instance?
Well, that's what you would have hoped, right? But right. Unfortunately, we did see a big decrease in cocaine, but now we're starting to see a steady increase. I mean, just recently, last couple of, 2015, if I'm not mistaken, you know, we had one of the highest death rates from cocaine overdoses that we hadn't seen in 5, 6, 7 years. They're coming back up. Marijuana is that really interesting one. You know, you have 33 states that have approved use of medical marijuana. It's been almost 25 years of medical marijuana in California. And now we have 10 states with recreational use and probably on our way to many more. So they're starting to see that marijuana is more of a, all right, we can control that a little bit. And there's many studies. Many people feel it's a gateway drug. They feel that if we make it legally recreational, then it won't become a gateway drug, because now you're going through a normal pattern to purchase it versus buying it from someone on the street who has other options for you.
Are people who really need opioids and these types of medications, are they able to get them now? Or because of the extra hoops they're jumping through, are they dealing with pain they didn't have to deal with before?
Yes, probably a little bit of both. You know, we have a lot of oncology patients that are extremely uncomfortable, and they certainly deserve the medication to make their pain go away. Doctors, unfortunately, sometimes are a little bit more hesitant now. But I think if you have a good relationship with your doctor, he knows your medical condition, and he knows if you need those medications, you're going to get them. For some people who have chronic pain, whether it's back pain or hip pain, you know, doctors are again going to be trying to say, okay, what can we do from physical therapy point of view? What can we do from anti-inflammatories to relieve some of that pain? Sometimes they'll even use steroid injections. You probably heard of people who've gotten steroid injections in their back. Those are some of the things that we need to start using instead of jumping initially to the opioids.
Before we run out of time here, and by the way, Dean, hold on. We'll get your answer to your question off the air from Doc before he hangs up. But you don't want to leave people hanging here. I don't want to leave people hanging here. You got people listening now who love somebody who's in trouble. What do they do?
Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest things. Somebody can walk into my office and I can see them and I won't have any clue about what they're doing, because for 15, 20 minutes in my office, they can be nice and polite and everything is fine. What you really need to do is, you guys as family members, as friends, if you notice someone who has an addictive personality, if you know someone that's addicted, if you know someone that's abusing alcohol, step up. Try to encourage them to get treatment, because often you're going to wait until something really bad happens. They either nearly overdose, they do overdose, they lose their job, they're kicked out of their family. Those are the individuals that if we would have stepped up and said, hey, let's get you some treatment. Hey, you have a problem. We need to work with this. Those are the ones that you're going to be able to save their life and make a big impact. And it won't hurt you as well, because now you're going to continue to have a friend or a family member that's been treated and is now back in society.
Yeah, and Al-Anon is a great resource for that, too, because it'll encourage you to not be codependent. Trust me, nobody was more codependent than I was with my parents and my brother. And it doesn't work. You can't love somebody out of addiction, and you can't give them enough money to make them see the light or whatever else you may be doing. So it's not your fault, but certainly take care of yourself. And get to an Al-Anon meeting, and you'll see what Doc's talking about as well. These are great notes, Doc. So Dr. Most basically writes a book every week on medicine, and then we get to exploit it by listening to the podcast and connecting to those notes. When are those up, Sandberg?
Right after the 10 minutes. 10 minutes most right
10
now.
Minutes isn't fast enough.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
You got it.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
An animal!
Dan Hammond. Anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Sponsored by Chevy Drive, Chicago.com. Number one for 7 years in a row. Hampshire Chevy guy. I'm a Chevy guy. You're probably a Chevy guy or girl. Why wouldn't you be? Number one. Hi, buddy.
You know, everybody with brains, they want to be a Chevy guy. I mean, you know, guess what? The way the Bears played yesterday, it's obvious they're Chevy guys, too.
So if I said to you 10 weeks ago, Hamp, I give you 6-3 after 10 games, you probably would have taken that, wouldn't you? Or after 10 weeks.
6-3 after 10 weeks.
10 weeks. Well, 10 weeks with a bye.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, you know, you're hitting me up right here. Let me just say this. Heck yeah. And everybody that has seen this team struggle, you know, through the nonsense of the Trestman era, then John, the ineffective 4 years of John Fox. For the first time in 10 tries, we have beaten a division opponent. There's a lot of good stuff here. The young quarterback that we, you know, we worry about on a weekly basis has, you know, shook off some of, you know, heavy criticism and came out and said, hey, I can play this game. And a lot of good stuff. But all this does is put you in a position where now the stakes are raised and now you got to really show somebody that you can play, and it's going to be against the best team in the division, the team that won it last year, the team that went to the NFC Championship game. It's a good time for everybody to start coming together, and you're exactly right. Would I have taken 6-3? Yes. But you know what? 7-3 sounds a little bit better.
It does. It does. Hamp, what was the most impressive thing about the way the Bears played yesterday? Was it the dominance of their defense? Was it Trubisky? What was the thing you liked the most?
Well, let's start with the quarterback. He was our player of the game. Obviously, there was a withering criticism of him all week. And a lot of times when that happens, you'll see somebody come out and it's like they're trying too hard, and it kind of blows up in their face. The kid looked off the safety on Allen Robinson's touchdown. He hit receivers in full stride. He was able to make a couple of things happen and get out of the pocket and run, which those things, you don't want to do it all the time. But if you do it once in a while, it's like a fly buzzing around the back of your head. It ain't going to kill you, but, man, it drives you nuts. The thing is, you know, he did so many good things. I think his quarterback rating was 140-something. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's great. Now, that being said, we need Jordan Howard to be more of a factor. We need the offensive line to be able to move people a little bit at the line of scrimmage, because when it gets cold, when the weather's inclement, then, you know, the running game has to, you know, be available. But all in all, the offense, can't say enough. Defense, Khalil Mack, he changes everything. I'm just telling you, the two sacks he had yesterday were just brute strength. And I was telling OB, you know, we loved to beat people with moves. And it's like today, everybody just bull rushing people into the quarterback's lap. And that's what he did twice. He ran over he's an equal opportunity enforcer.
Crusher.
He ran over both offensive tackles for sacks.
The other name, of course, Roquan Smith, 2 weeks in a row now, starting to show flashes of why he was picked in the first round, eighth overall. What do you think of Roquan Smith and what the defense is doing with Khalil Mack back on the field?
Well, and like I said, pass rush kills. Now, Roquan is still a work in progress. He made a number of tackles the last couple of weeks, mainly because he's covering a tight end or a slot receiver or a running back that the opposition, the quarterbacks on the other end, they're saying, okay, who's Roquan got? Well, I'm throwing it at him. So he'll make 10 tackles, but he's basically being identified as the guy they want to take advantage of. So he's getting better. You know, he's obviously, and I said this maybe back in September, I said he is going to be very important to the defense this year, because we're going to be playing nickel 70% of the time with he and Danny Trevathan as the two linebackers. He's stepped in. He's done a lot of good stuff. Is he one of the best players on defense? Not yet. I'll tell you what, Prince of Mukamara, that was his best game. A forced fumble, an interception, eight tackles. Yeah. A lot of good coverage, and it's a really good time for him and Fuller to get ready, because this Minnesota team has got three home run hitters at wideout. So this is, I'm telling you, NBC has really made themselves look smart by flexing this game to Sunday night. It's going to be a barn burner.
Well, Dave made a great point here, Dave, and that is that the Bears may be leading the division, but until proven differently, the Vikings are the best.
Yeah, you have to beat the
team. You got
to
beat the Vikings. That's right.
You got to beat
them. What else you got, Dave?
Do you think Amukamara looked better once he got his extra A back on his jersey?
It's hard to believe that happened, you know? And they never misspelled Cochran one time on a paycheck, have they?
No. They put the E on it. I don't cash it. All right, now I got a question for you, Dan Hampton, because I worried about you guys yesterday, because I wasn't able to see the whole game, but what I saw was really a dominant performance. And I said, what is OB going to have afterward that'll give him heartburn? What is really going to churn with OB? And then I started thinking about you, and then I hear four times Cody Parkey hits the upright. I can't, you couldn't get odds on that in Vegas. So what are your thoughts on kickers this morning, Hampton?
And I'm obviously catching a little flack. I said, you know, the thing about today, after he doinked the uprights, the fourth time, not the first, the second, or the third, it was the fourth, all the guys on the team came up giving him knuckle bumps, you know, like, oh, it's okay, it's okay. I said, are you kidding me? You just doinked your fourth upright? Come on. I said, you know, everybody wants to be all buddy-buddy. I said, I was on the team on his how to stab him on the sidelines. You know,
wait. To be specific, what you said was yesterday, we actually have the quote. I don't want you to get your own quote wrong. Listen in.
You know, fail miserably, and everybody gives you a fist pump. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I'd be on the sidelines wanting to stab him.
This is a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a spoon.
I see you've plied knifey-spoony before.
And you mean that. You mean that as constructive criticism.
I get caught up in things. And you're right. OB was just, you know, beside himself. How a kicker could be that ineffective. But I'll tell you this, you know, and OB and I and Taz, we've actually, you know, everybody wants to go, oh, 6-3, this is great, isn't it? Well, it's good, and we're on the road to getting to be great, but we're not going to accept less than they're capable of. And yesterday was the first time that we really, you know, passed out a lot of kudos, you know, not only to the quarterback, but to Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy, think about this. The Philadelphia Eagles, we saw them last night, get beat. That's your defending Super Bowl team. They get beat at home by a 3-5 Dallas Cowboy team. So every game is tough. Every game matters. But first time all year, I mean, this is, the team seems to be, I don't want to say catching fire, but, man, we're lined up and headed out into the deep water with it. Yeah, it's good.
So I'm going to call Kevin Butler later and just to see, because I'm figuring he can't tell me the story on the air, just see what you said to him when he missed a couple of kicks, because Kevin's very, he's a Weisenheimer and he's a funny guy, and whether you threatened to kill him on the sidelines, because, again, I'm sure that the language in that particular exchange probably isn't arable. And then I'll call you, Hamp, to remind you of the story. So.
Well, I'm sure knife play would figure into that conversation as well.
So. All right, so here's what I want to do. Going forward this week, and Sandberg, you tell me where. Nobody knows more about football. Dan Hampton's forgotten more about football. Other than Dave Ennett, nobody knows more about football. So there's no stupid questions. If you have a question about football, not just about the Bears, but a question about football, about the game of football that you want to ask Hamp about, where do they send it?
You can send it to the Steve Cochran Show Facebook page. You can send me an email at msandberg, S-A-N-D-B-E-R-G, at WGNradio.com. You can also text us during our show. If you don't text during our show, we won't see it. So say question for Hamp, and then your question.
Follow me on Twitter and send it there, too.
Can you just text Hamp's cell phone?
You can call Cody Parkey and say, could you run this by Hamp's house? All right. Enough of you. Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Thank you, buddy.
Jobbers.
There you go. Can you imagine Cody Parkey's driving home after the game? He's got our postgame on and he hears that.
Yeah.
I would go into the witness protection program immediately.
I thought this morning's quote was a little bit better than yesterday's because today's was active. He was like, I'm going to stab him. I'd stab him. What he said yesterday was, I would think about stabbing him. But see, he's moved it a day forward.
Yeah, and by the way, kids, he doesn't mean literally stab.
No,
it's frustration.
I get what the players are. I mean, it's the same thing. When you watch a college basketball player miss a free throw, everybody high-fives him.
Right.
Why don't you high-five him after he makes the free throw?
I hate the fist bump after a missed free throw. I hate it. But then again, we're all old.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That music, appropriate. Tell you why in just a second for the most valuable person on the planet. First, a helpful texter from the 219. Steve, I know you got to clean it up for the kids and some grown-ups, but I beg to differ. Hamp meant what he said. He would stab him. Not to kill him or end his career, but a clear message needed to be sent. All right, the most valuable persons on the planet for Monday, November 12th, 2018. Newly elected Dan Crenshaw going into Congress. Is it Texas or Oklahoma? It's one of them, too. Texas. And Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live. And in case you missed it, Pete Davidson, really not a great joke the week before, two weeks ago on Weekend Update. Justin, you and I share a viewpoint here that it's comedy. Don't look for your political in comedy. Having said that,
still a dumb joke.
Pete Davidson steps up to apologize when Dan Crenshaw came on set. Listen.
And what I'm sure was a huge shock for people who know me, I made a poor choice last week. I made a joke about Lieutenant Commander Dan Crenshaw, and on behalf of the show and myself, I apologize. From the bottom of my heart, it was a poor choice of words. The man is a war hero, and he deserves all the respect in the world. And if any good came of this, maybe it was that for one day, the left and the right finally came together to agree on something. That I'm a d-
You think?
Crenshaw comes on set. For those of you who don't know Crenshaw, he has an eye patch. He lost an eye in Afghanistan. So he comes on set, and I thought he handled it from the outset really well, but he was great. He was just great on Weekend Update. And Dan Crenshaw decided maybe Pete should get a little in return.
For people that don't know, the reason you're wearing an eye patch right now is that you lost your eye to an IED in Afghanistan during your third combat tour. And I'm sorry.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate you saying that.
So we good?
We're good. Apology accepted. Just keep breathing.
It sounds like my phone's ringing. You gonna answer that?
No, I was just gonna let it ring because that's rude to answer. Let's just let it go to voicemail.
No, it's cool. Aria.
Well, yeah. Oh, do you know her?
Yes, so well done.
I just want to point out, Justin is laughing in studio after earlier he told us he's over this joke and tired of Pete Davidson in the storyline.
Well, I can't be the only one that I just feel like my point was, I thought it was great. I thought, like you said, the congressman was great. I thought the sentiment was amazing. But it's all in apology for a dumb Pete Davidson joke. So they're taking away 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes of a comedy show from me in Chicago to get another sketch or get something else.
But
they're forced into apology.
No, it's not just about the laugh. They paid it off. They paid it off by taking this overwrought cultural moment and actually delivering a message. Listen.
There's a lot of lessons to learn here. Not just that the left and right can still agree on some things, but also this, Americans can forgive one another. We can remember what brings us together as a country and still see the good in each other. This is Veterans Day weekend, which means that it's a good time for every American to connect with a veteran. Maybe say thanks for your service, but I would actually encourage you to say something else. Tell a veteran, never forget. When you say never forget to a veteran, you are implying that as an American, you are in it with them. not separated by some imaginary barrier between civilians and veterans, but connected together as grateful fellow Americans who will never forget the sacrifices made by veterans past and present, and never forget those we lost on 9/11, heroes like Pete's father. So I'll just say, Pete, never forget.
Never forget.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. That's the message. Took a little bit to get there, but they got there. By the way, the continuing abuse of Dustin Hoffman comes up later for his boys' karaoke yeah. weekend.
It's an awesome sentiment. It's just a weird spot to be in SNL. That's just my thought.
Coming up, headlines and Ryan Nobles from CNN, who's been on the Florida story all weekend. We'll get to that after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
If you're watching the live stream at WGNradio.com, you can click on listen to this or watch this. And of course, after 9, we're on CLTV. But if you're watching, you're wondering why I have a coat on, why Sandberg has a coat on. It's not just because we're cool. It's 55 degrees in here. Is that right?
Yes. 55 on one of them and 62 on the other. So it's freezing.
10th Avenue freeze out?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's going on here? They're trying to break my deal?
Yep.
You won't break my will? On the other side of the temperature equation is our friend Ryan Nobles, who has spent the weekend in Florida, where it's got to be 80 today again, I'm sure, and sunny. But
Steve, it's actually quite cold here in Tallahassee. We are suffering through 62 degrees and sunny, so you should feel bad for me.
I really do. Here, come here, I'll give you a hug.
and I've been here for more than a week, and I could be here for a month. So,
well, here's the thing. I get the politics of this, but really, what's the reality of either of these Florida races being overturned in a recount?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Steve, because, you know, there is a lot of excitement about this. Everyone's hearkening back to 2000. I heard someone describe it as the poor sequel of the first big movie, which is probably an apt way to describe it. But I do think the reality of the situation is that neither the Senate race or the governor race is probably going to change hands. We're looking at, in the Senate, in the governor's race, it's about a 35,000 vote difference, which in the context of 8.5 million votes is infinitesimal. But really, when you're counting ballots in a recount, is an extraordinarily high number to try and flip. And in the Senate race, it's down to about 12,000 votes. That's still, there's never been a recount in a statewide election anywhere in the country that has flipped with a vote margin that big. Now, the caveat I'll say to all of this is that the Democrats are kind of pinning their hopes on in Palm Beach or in Broward County, which is, you know, Broward County is the center of all craziness in Florida elections. There's this anomaly, I guess is the best way to describe it, with some of the voting machines there, where there's about 25,000 votes less for Bill Nelson than there were for Andrew Gillum and the other candidates that ran on the ballot. So they're wondering if maybe there's a problem with a machine down there. And if there's a problem with a machine down there, then perhaps there's a big batch of votes out there for Bill Nelson that we haven't found yet. Still, even under those circumstances, it's a long shot. So, yeah, we're going to spend a lot of time here, and we're going to focus on it because it's a big state with a lot of moving parts and important in the national conversation. But the idea that these races flip, I still think, is a long shot.
And the reason Kristen Sinema, the Democrat, has flipped her race in Arizona is the two outstanding counties were very Democrat-heavy, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the big difference between these two races is now in Florida, we are at the stage where all the votes have been counted. So it's one thing if you're still, if there are still buckets of votes somewhere that you haven't gone through and you can add to an existing total. When you can add to an existing total, which was the case from election night until Saturday morning, that's where the Democrats still felt they had a chance, because Broward County, where it took them so long to count, was a Democratic-heavy area where votes could come in. But now we've reached a stage in Florida where we already have an existing pile of votes. It's that existing pile of votes that has to change, and that's where it gets really hard to flip the margin. You know, there has to be some sort of real serious problem with the count to make that happen. And frankly, I mean, people don't want to believe this about Florida, but they actually have gotten a much better about counting their votes than they did back in 2000. They have all new voting machines. They have a finite amount of time where it has to be done in. The process here should be much better than it was in 2000, and the chances that these machines got it wrong the first time around
right.
are pretty slim.
Ryan, there was much made this weekend because on election night, the pundits and everyone was analyzing the results said it wasn't as much of a blue wave as thought, that there was a little bit more of a middle of the road, and you saw the president with his press conference the next day claiming victory.
Yeah.
But as more of these votes played out and we saw some of the flips, as you're talking about, even the recounts in Florida, this weekend, he saw in both the Post and New York Times talking about that it indeed was a blue wave. And that you are seeing some of the biggest victories in election history, going all the way back to the early 70s from Democrats in midterms.
Yeah, I do think that this that perhaps one of the mistakes that we make in covering elections is that we want clear answers to the results on election night. And it's funny you mention that, because not to try and pump my network, but CNN is actually going to do a special report Tuesday night, a week after the election, from 8 to 11 p.m., where we basically reanalyze exactly what we saw on election night, go back through all the results again, and try and ascertain exactly what happened. The fact of the matter is, as these vote totals continue to come down, Democrats continue to run up margins in these House races. I think the House is going to end up being in the range of their best case scenario. And frankly, the Senate, they're very lucky that Rick Scott is probably going to hold on here in Florida, because, they lost the race in West Virginia. They lost the race in Montana. They're going to flip the race in Arizona, which doesn't fall in their, which didn't fall into their game plan. They're going to have a little bit bigger of a margin in the Senate than they did before. But given the map that they had and given the rhetoric from the president, this was something where they could have really swept the table and taken a commanding lead in the United States Senate. So I agree with you. I mean, I'm not sure if I would describe it as a blue wave necessarily, because, the Republicans did hold back in a number of key gubernatorial races that they didn't think that they could do, Florida being an example of that. So the Republicans did have a much better night than they could have, but I think the message here is we all need to take a deep breath on election night, because I don't think we can make these broad proclamations as to which way the race goes until all the votes get counted over the next couple of days.
Tomorrow night, CNN rehashes last week, which seems like 6 months ago, because that's the world we live in now. More sunblock for you, and good work this weekend.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Ryan Nobles from CNN.
Talk a riddle, yeah, come on. And get your Black Hawk tickets.
That's right, yeah. Riddles. Riddles, your key to Hawks tickets. John DeCosta has written another beauty here. This is for Friday night's L.A. Kings-Blackhawks game. A little nervous going to that game, because if they don't snap out of it, like I'm guaranteeing they will, I may have to play Friday night, and my skating is suspect.
Very suspect.
I'm going to give you the riddle right now. Just tell me what I'm talking about. Oh, if you only could. Tell me what I'm referencing here, and be the first caller to do that, and you're a big winner. A Japanese warrior, through and through, he would plug up a hole like gridiron glue. The second pick from a bear to a bear, a call from the hall, and his wide-eyed stare. Who is it? Mm. Not what is it, who is it? A Japanese warrior, through and through. He'd plug up a hole like gridiron glue. The second pick from a bear to a bear, and a call from the hall. And his wide-eyed stare.
I know the answer.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
I only know the code because I saw the answer when I put it in the rundown.
I actually figured this one out.
This one.
This one I figured
it's
out.
It's doable.
Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the number. Well, we get a winner.
Dave has marked it as doable.
Yeah, doable.
There's one clue that could throw people off.
I think it's good. Yeah, no, I think it's good. A brand new feature on the show that's only going to take a second here, and I just invented it. It's called, I didn't know that. It's called, I didn't know that. Why do you think you never see litter on the ground at Disney World? Anyone? Why is it so clean, Disney World? Why is it so clean? Why is there no litter on the ground?
Because they constantly have those guys in the red striped white suits with the straw hats sweeping.
Wrong.
Really?
The reason is because all Disney employees, from Walt Disney to those that rent strollers and everybody in between, are tasked and agree to, when they're hired, to pick up any trash on the ground immediately when they see it, including characters, which makes you think if the Beast were there, he might tip over because of the size of his head. But you have to pick up trash that's on the ground when you see it.
Okay. When you go, don't you pick up trash too if you see it? I mean,
on the ground?
Yeah, you want to keep it clean.
The place is just so beautiful. How can you stop yourself from picking up the trash?
Other people's trash, I have issues with.
Do you see Jen DeSalvo is wearing some sort of hooded animal type outfit in the trash?
Is she a Disney character?
Mickey Mouse. Dude, it's Mickey Mouse.
She's wearing a Mickey Mouse hat.
Wait, I got one more. What's the real reason you get your receipt checked when you leave Costco? Because aren't you annoyed a little bit? You leave in Costco, yeah.
They have the highlighter. And
and they go through and they check off a couple things. What's the real reason?
To see if you're stealing.
Nope. Incorrect. Anyone? 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 The real reason is because of the speed required at checkout at Costco, the person at the door is tasked to make sure you didn't get overcharged.
They go through
to make sure that you weren't double charged or overcharged in accordance with what you have in the cart. Now, if you're like me, I go through and a guy looks and he checks it off with his highlighter and I move on.
Yeah.
But for those that are diligent about their job, it's to protect you from being overcharged. And they say they catch hundreds every day in Costco's across the country and save the money.
And they never catch anyone being undercharged?
You know, that's an interesting point, Dave. I think that's Kohl's, where they tell you how much you saved when you leave. So there you go. It's a brand new feature. It's called, I didn't know that. Let's go to Greg in Highland Park. Greg, do you know the answer to the riddle?
I do.
What is it?
Mike Singletary.
That's exactly right. You're going to the game Friday night. Who are you going to bring?
Still working on that.
Okay. Blackhawks Kings Friday night, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingAndCooling.com. Win them this afternoon as well. Well, not you. You're not eligible. You've already got your tickets.
That's right.
Rowan Anna this afternoon at 4:40 will give away some more. Hold on, Greg. I'll see you Friday at the Madhouse on Madison. What's the situation at 8? Steve will tell you from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just moments on 720.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Welcome to More on Entertainment, where Dean gives us more on entertainment. Good morning.
It's called that.
Well, that's part of the reason.
That's the main reason it's called that.
We got a lot of important news to get to, but before we get to any of it, let's talk about what really matters. Did you or did you not, yesterday at Tree Time during your live broadcast, kill newsman Dave Schwann with an errant arrow?
He is not dead today.
Okay, good.
Turns out
you're very skilled.
Well, here's, you know, we're going to shoot an apple off of newsman Dave Schwann's head.
What kind of apple?
It was not a Honeycrisp. I was looking for a Honeycrisp because generally those are pretty big.
They are big.
But when I went to the store, they were actually very small. So I found the biggest apple that I could find. I don't remember the variety name. Johnigold, maybe? Johnigold?
Yeah. Johnigold. Yeah, he used to be a DJ.
It was a large apple. Now, it turns out a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
The Tree Time people, who were very, very nice to us in Lake Barrington, they rearranged their whole store to accommodate our standing room only crowd that we had out there yesterday.
Good.
They were a little afraid that I might kill one of their customers.
What?
It seems ridiculous.
Such little errant faith.
So there was that. And then the lawyers got involved and the insurance people got involved. They didn't think it was as funny as I did, shooting an apple off of another staff member's head.
But yet, you still shot an arrow.
But, so, we had a cardboard cutout of Dave Schwann.
Okay.
And we put an apple on its head, still shooting an apple off of Dave Schwann's head.
Sure.
And I grazed the apple with an arrow, but I did not get it right into the apple.
But you didn't hit the head.
But I did. Oh, well, I took four or five shots. Two of them did go in his face. On the cardboard got him. So
was that the first two?
Maybe like number two and three.
Ah. Yeah, well,
maybe number two and three.
I guess
one went right into his forehead.
I don't want a Monday morning quarterback this thing, but maybe the right call was made.
I don't know. I was thrown off because it was a cardboard cutout, not a human.
Right. Yeah. I think that Dean under pressure, would have been able to execute this properly.
Well, let's listen to see how it went down. Here's a clip from yesterday.
Oh, my.
Watch as I put a cloth yard shaft through his wishbone. I'm watching, Jester.
Yeah, that's exactly how it went down.
Thuffer and fuck attach.
All right, well, good. I'm glad he's alive.
It all went very, very well. And we had big fun. Lots of people coming up to us and saying how much they enjoy more on entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, where we give you more
entertainment.
On entertainment.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. We have amazing stories of celebrities who were caught up in the wildfires in Southern California.
Now it's gotten serious.
Yeah, exactly. But the good news is it does keep attention on it. Joe Perry from Aerosmith is in the news. Weird Al. And in case you didn't see what I picked out for the red carpet at the People's Choice Awards last night, Dean will talk about that as well.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment man.
Back and more on entertainment is on. Hey, before we go any further, just before you came on, we had played a bunch of audio from Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you saw it. I was very impressed.
I didn't see the whole show. I saw bits and pieces
of
it.
Saw the clips, though, right?
I saw the Pete Davidson clip.
Which, yeah, I thought it was well done.
I thought it was really well done.
And this guy, this Crenshaw guy, very impressive dude. I mean, not just because he's a war hero, but... he came out. He's got a little comedy chops. He's a good-looking guy.
He does. And,
I think 2 years in Congress go right to show business.
It's worth watching that clip today, especially Veterans Day, because I mean, they goofed around and made fun of Pete Davidson. But he had some really beautiful and poignant words to say about veterans and Veterans Day. And I thought it was really nice also that he acknowledged Pete Davidson's father, who, in talking about the heroes of September 11th, talked about heroes like Pete Davidson's father, who was killed that day at the World Trade Center.
He was only 7 years old at the time, and he'll tell you things went south for a long time after that. And he's still trying to come out of that. All right, let's get on to the terrible story of the wildfires. We got celebrities' homes burning down?
Continuing. Well, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people are affected by this. Celebrities, you know, join in with everyone else.
But here's the thing. I spend a lot of time in L.A. You're out there every 10 minutes. Malibu always seemed shielded to me because the fire had to jump the highway. It had to jump the PCH to get to your house if you were on the water. But there are Malibu homes that are on the other side, right? That must be what's going on?
I guess so. But plus, this fire is so huge. I don't think it's that difficult for it to jump the Pacific Coast Highway this time. Lady Gaga's home was evacuated. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West's. Cher said she tweeted that she could see flames right across the street from her home in Malibu, could not see her neighbor's home right across the street from hers through all of the smoke that was going on. So it was really out of control. But celebrities who are not as lucky as just being evacuated and just seeing flames, Gerard Butler's house was burnt to the ground. There is nothing left of Gerard Butler's home in that area. Singer Neil Young, Miley Cyrus, Robin Thicke, all completely losing their homes.
Wow.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Camille Grammer, house burned to the ground. There's pictures of her house totally engulfed in flames. And firefighters were able to save a few things from the home, but it's gone. House is gone. Completely
awful.
Gone.
Yep. Yeah, it's really awful. And those fights continue today. Aerosmith Joe Perry, what's wrong with him?
He did a concert with my twin brother, Billy Joel. Mm-hmm. Our twin.
I was going to say.
Our
hello.
Triplet. Our
triplets from different mothers.
Our third triplet, Billy Joel. He was doing a concert and goes backstage after doing Walk This Way and collapses. Couldn't catch his breath. Paramedics were called. They did a
tracheotomy?
A tracheal tube.
Okay.
I think that's the same as a tracheotomy, where they put a tube in so he could breathe. Took him to the hospital. He's doing okay this morning. They say they expect him to be back on the road later on this month. But
do they know what's wrong with him?
Scary moment. They don't.
Hmm.
Nope. They said that he's alert and responsive, though. So just more than I can say for us.
Yeah, I'm far from alert. For those of you who don't know, every summer Dean lives at Ravinia. He leaves his home and he moves into Ravinia on opening night.
It's nice of him to let me put a tent right up on the lawn.
And he doesn't come home until the end of the season.
Sometimes I come out in my bathrobe during the CSO concert.
Exactly. Even concerts you're not working, you come out.
It's embarrassing for the people there. But the first major concert announcement, this is for next summer. But it's kind of a big deal that Weird Al Yankovic is going to be appearing at Ravinia. It's his first time ever at Ravinia. He's going to be appearing with the Ravinia Festival Orchestra. So big, you know, classical, very prestigious orchestra.
Here's the thing. He's a really good musician. I mean, really is. And so he's got a very tight band. And I opened for him a couple of times. And I thought, oh, this is kind of dumb. I hung around. I mean, not only is he a great guy, he does a really entertaining show. I think that people are going to love it.
I think this is going to be huge. It's going to be, the Ravinia will make this announcement later today. It's July 28th. Tickets don't even go on sale till next May. You know, they release all their tickets at the same time in May. But, put it on your radar. If you're interested in seeing Weird Al, going to be at Ravinia for the
first time. Put a pushpin in it, Grandpa? Is that what you're going to say?
Trying to update the language a little bit.
Now, you know, last night on the red carpet at the People's Choice Awards, I went with a slinky, sexy little strapless number. What did you think?
I thought you should have spent a little more time getting some electrolysis.
Any People's Choice highlights we need
to
know?
Said, look at the fur coat that Steve's wearing.
I thought it was interesting that Mila Kunis, that spy movie won her...
The Spy Who Dumped Me won.
Yeah, because I think it got the worst, critics disliked it, but that's...
It is one of the worst movies of the year, and that's... I'm not saying that's what happens when you leave the awards in the hands of the people, but
that's exactly what
happens. It's a small group of people who vote for these things,
right.
And whoever has the biggest fan base winds up winning these things.
Yeah.
It's not any sort of scientific, telling of what the people's tastes
are. It's like the Golden Globes with more liquor.
Well, they
loved The Spy.
It's the worst award show of the year.
Yeah, it is bad.
Worst award show of the year. They chose Avengers Infinity War is best movie of the year. They chose Shadowhunters The Mortal Instruments as favorite TV show of the year.
I don't even know what that is.
But, well, that's because it's been canceled already. That's why you don't know about that. Shawn Mendes was named a male musical artist of the year. Nicki Minaj, female, and the Korean boy band BTS was named favorite group.
Did Nicki Minaj's giant boobs get any awards?
Many of Nicki Minaj's giant appendages were given special awards. They had different awards for different parts of the body.
Okay, well, that seems right.
The Kardashians, they donated, their award was in honor of the fires and the shootings. That was nice.
They dedicated it.
That seemed very... I didn't watch the whole show. I can only take so much pain. I watched like maybe 40 minutes of it, and I had to turn it off. It was so stupid. But it seemed... You know, these fires are ravaging. They hold these awards in Santa Monica, not more than 10 miles away. California's burning to death.
Yeah, maybe you don't have them.
And maybe you cancel the awards.
Right.
You know, everyone's coming up on stage saying, oh, we want to honor, you know, those who are, you know, being affected by the fires. While you're dressed up for a fancy night out. It seemed completely inappropriate to me. In addition, did I mention this is the stupidest award show
Wow. Next thing you know, he's going to shoot an arrow or an apple off the head of the People's Choice Awards. All right, listen, I'm glad you're not in jail, and thank you for another edition of More on Entertainment.
Steve, thank you for speaking with me.
Headlines next, 720 WGN.
From a certain Midwestern town that starts with a C, ends with an O, and in the middle is Hickok.
Favorite day, Sunday. Favorite team, the Bears. Favorite store, Ventures. Stairs. Favorite show, Danza. Also, the news. Weatherman, Skilling. Music, the Bulls. Favorite actor, Denny. Favorite drink, Old Duels. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls.
Was it Old Duels?
Bulls.
Old Duels?
Old Duels.
Anybody have an Old Duels this weekend?
I did not. Serengeti. Just, I love this song. And it gets, and when the Bears win, I just feel like Chicago and the Chicago accent and everything about it comes alive. And I don't know. It could be any other team where you're like, man, that's great the Cubs are winning. It's great that the Hawks are winning. Bulls even. But man,
the Bears.
The Bears winning. And
the
it's
Bears.
Just like, the ghost of Ditka comes out with the big mustache.
He's not dead. Well, scaring the hell out of people.
The ghost of 80s Ditka.
Maggie and Alicia are already standing by, but explain what they're playing for.
All right, this is the Chicago Accent Challenge. We do it every Monday, and the idea is if you've got a great Chicago accent, be proud of it. We want to honor the great elongated vowels of our region. 312-981-7200. If you think you got a good one, we'll ask you a couple questions. We'll suss them out. We'll pick a winner at the end of the segment. You'll get yourself one of the prizes from the
tens
prize
of dollars in prizes,
tens of
Justin.
Dollars. And you automatically are entered into the stage show, which we're doing at the Chicago Podcast
Festival. How are details
Festival.
Coming together on that?
December 2nd, 6 o'clock at the Chicago Theater Works. I've got celebrity judges lined up, which is awesome.
Can you
gonna
announce them, or is it too early?
I'm just afraid they're going to bail. That's, it always ends up with comics. But Katie Rich from Saturday Night Live is going to be one of the celebrity judges.
Good.
Yeah, but excellent. Like I said, I'm like, yeah, until she says she's not doing it anymore.
So, all right, let's go to Maggie, and you take it from here, because I want to see what they've got.
Maggie, welcome to the Chicago Accent Challenge.
Oh, I'm so excited.
All right, good. I like that.
That's one of the big things. You got to be excited. You got to bring that energy. I love it. So where are you from? Where are you from, Maggie?
Okay, so I grew up at about 67th and Hermitage until I was two. And then I moved to Oaklawn. And I know that's not quite in Chicago, but you got to remember, I came from Chicago parents.
I'm hearing a lot of Chicago.
Yeah, there's got the elongated A.
That, those 2 years really left an impression on
me. Yeah, you could tell. The elongated A. Where do you think you got your accent from?
From my parents. I mean, they were true Chicagoans, and wherever I go and I travel, people will say to me, "You sound like you're from Chicago," and that always makes me weirded out. I'm like, really? How did you know that?
Yeah, I can detect just a touch.
Just a touch. Okay, Maggie. All right, well, let's get right to it. I'll ask you a couple questions here, and we'll go with the flow. I'll start easy one. Ready? Welcome to Portillo's. Okay. May I take your order?
All right, well, this is one that I'm really going to fail on, okay? So I'm going to have two hot dogs, but I don't like mustard. So I'm going to add a little bit of ketchup on there. I know that's so wrong for Chicagoans, but that's what we grew up on. Throw some onions on there and give me some sport peppers and pick a cheese fry.
All right, now let me ask you, Justin, because as someone who's been in this game for a while.
Yeah.
Did she lose points for the ketchup and then win points for the extras?
It's not even about what's on the ingredients. It's there's a lot of Chicago that comes out order.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not a judge, because I would judge for the ketchup. I don't think a sport pepper and ketchup go together.
Well,
the
it's
taste
none of your
alone.
Business, obviously.
I just love that order. If I were at Portillo's and I just heard Maggie do that exact order, I'd be like, "That's the greatest order of all time." All right, Maggie, how do you get over by Ma's?
Okay, so you're cutting over to Ma's house. You know where the school is. Come over by the school. You're going to go down that street behind the school, down by where Jimmy Calhoun lives.
Oh yeah,
we're
going
to go down to the we're going to go down to the corner where that creepy lady with those yellow, ugly, I don't even know what those are, those shutters on her house.
Sure.
Turn left there. Come down the street till you get. My house has those silly light posts out in front of it.
Sure.
Half of them work, half of them don't work. Come in the back door and grab me a pop out of the icebox and meet me in the front room because we're watching Sybil. Sybil is a lot like Mrs. Grassman. You got to come see this.
Maggie. How do you follow Maggie?
You just answered like nine questions in one answer.
Maggie's all right. Why don't we get to
all right,
be
Maggie?
Fair,
hold on, okay.
To be fair to Alicia. We need to give a little separation here. We need to give her a little room, and then you can invite some other people in.
That's fine.
All right,
312-981-7200. If you think you can beat Maggie, that's good. That's a tall order.
Come on, Alicia.
It's been done. Yeah, it's easier to come in at the end than it is to be the initial contestant.
Maggie strong.
Nailed it there. So yeah.
Favorite actor, Billy. Favorite drink, Old Bulls, Bears, Hawks, Sox,
Bulls.
All right, you got Alicia and Mike, Justin, for the Accent Challenge.
Let's keep going. Let's rapid fire through the Chicago Accent Challenge, 312-981-7200. Remember, if you win, you are automatically entered into the live show, stage show at Chicago Theater Works for the Chicago Podcast
Festival. Didn't mention how much they could win.
December 2nd at 6 p.m., you can win $333. Think of it like a pageant. Think of it like a tournament, like blood sport. Remember the Van Damme?
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
But without the blood, less blood.
By the way,
just less blood.
By the way, for all sponsors listening, at last word, Justin doesn't have the 333 covered. So if you want to chime in, all right, here's Alicia.
I'll get it. I'm good for it. Alicia, welcome to the Chicago Accent Challenge.
Right. Thank you. I'm very excited to be talking to you.
Oh, well, we're excited to be talking to you. Where are you from, Alicia?
Well, originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina. So, my accent, I had to learn. Anybody can have a Chicago accent if you're born here. But I learned my accent listening to Wally Phillips.
Is that right?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and he kept me company.
Oh, that's very nice.
And do you ever go back? Do you go back and people go, what kind of accent is that?
Yes. Because I have an accent there, and I have an accent at home here in Chicago, so I really don't know where I belong.
Oh, yeah, you're a mess.
Yeah, I am. But in my mind, I'm all Chicago.
I love it. I love it. You are all Chicago for this, so let's get to it. Alicia, welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
Yes, please. I'll have a wet beef with sweet peppers and fries.
You ain't getting that in Argentina.
That's great. Okay. All right. All right, Alicia, let me ask you a question. What do you get on your pizza?
Well, I have a green pepper, and my husband will have double sausage, which grosses me out. But, yeah.
Double sausage. And that's a heavy
that's a heavy
right there.
Double sausage.
Yuck.
Okay, and then I'll ask you one more question here. Let's go with how do you get over by Maz?
Oh, that's easy.
I know that's
you take 294 to O'Hare and get on the flight, American flight to Buenos Aires. 12 hours later, you're there,
and then you're there.
Ah, you're great,
Alicia. Great, thank you. Thanks for playing. That's good. She did great.
Yeah, she was playing dirty by mentioning Wally Phillips. Yeah, I mean, how do you not give her a prize with that?
They're strong. There's no question
about
it.
Let's go rapid fire, Mike. Welcome to the Chicago Accent Challenge. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Good. Where are you from?
Elmwood Park. Well, actually, I was born at Humphrey and Congress, and I was born over by St. Luke's there, which I guess that was Rush.
Okay. We're going to go a little rapid fire.
Moved Elmwood Park.
Mike, welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
Yeah, I have a beef, wet peppers, and jardiniere.
Okay. And how do you get over by Maz?
Well, normally I take North Avenue, and I go down to 75th Avenue, turn right, go down there, turn over on Armitage, zip over to 75th Court, and I'm right there.
All right.
Can't believe you didn't go up Cicero.
Yeah, okay, Mike. All right. That's good. Let's go on. Let's move to Dolores.
All right. Hold on. We'll give Dolores.
Dolores is such a great Chicago name. Dolores, welcome to the Chicago Accent Challenge.
Well, thank you. I've been trying to get to you guys for many days, but never had the luck.
All right. Well, today's your lucky day.
Okay.
Welcome to
you want to know where I come from?
Of course I do.
Okay. Sorry.
I like it. Justin sometimes gets a little long there. Let's get right
Justin.
To the point.
Get to the point.
I love Justin. I really like him.
Oh, guys, Dolores.
So does his mom.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm right in the heart of Chicago. I'm on 51st and Long Avenue, right near airport, right near the airport.
Yeah, right by Midway. That's awesome. Okay,
yes, sir. Between Harlem and Cicero.
Okay, Dolores, let me ask you a couple questions. Okay, ready? Quickly, how you get over by Maz?
Oh, if I step out of my home and walk five doors down south, I'm at my mom's.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's how close. I'm on the same block I was born on.
Wow, that's great. That's very Chicago.
And I will be 89 in December.
I doubt that. You sound fabulous.
Yeah. And then I'll ask a question. Welcome to Portillo's. May I take your order?
Yes, please. I want a full order of the slab of ribs, and I'll have a little extra sauce and a hot beef sandwich.
And a hot beef sandwich.
A little extra sauce.
All right, Dolores. Great. Thank you for calling.
89. She's rocking it.
That was awesome, man. What a great lineup.
My husband
always
likes extra sauce.
We've got, and I know Jimmy's on the line. I know Jake's on the line. There's others. But
will you grab those off the air and give them their fair hearing?
Or have them call back because we'll do it next week. We're doing it for three more weeks.
Such a tough judge.
I say Maggie. I mean, she just kind of came out the box with
she was strong.
Vinegar.
She was strong. What do you know?
But she put the ketchup on the hot
dog. Oh, please. It's got to be Maggie.
I say Maggie. Dave, what do you think, Maggie?
I'd go Maggie.
Everybody was great.
Maggie wins. Way to go, Maggie, from Yorkville.
All right, so there you go. And details coming together every single moment for the big live show. All right, after 9 o'clock, we are back with the CLTV Hour, and it's Adoption Awareness Month. We're going to do adoption and foster care stuff all week in the 9 o'clock hour. Tell you more about that when we come back. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Steve is next.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
I've got Christmas on my mind. I adore that lovely time. Feeling like our little child.
Well, you may think you're ready for Christmas. Nobody's more Christmas than Pete Zimmerman. He's our little Christmas elf. Good morning, elf.
Good morning.
He's dressed like an elf today. He's wearing black and red buffalo plaid with a cat-haired filled green cardigan.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? You got a lot of cats.
I was reprimanded for wearing this around the home yesterday. This is my work cardigan.
So you're reprimanded.
This is my work.
First off, the fact that you have two is great. Your work and your casual cardigan.
Right, like my home.
Did you mix them up? Is that what happened?
My schedule is I come home, I take off my clothes, put them on a chair.
Mm-hmm.
Next morning, I wake up, go to that same chair, put those clothes back
on. See what that chair has offered you
in
the last 24 hours.
Wait, so, but why were you yelled at? Molly doesn't like the look?
Because this is my work cardigan. I should look like I'm not a pauper coming to work. Yeah. So I wear the one that's going to get cat hair and dog fur and
She's
stuff.
She's still trying to change you, isn't she?
Yes. He needs a lot of help, I think. So.
How's the podcast?
The podcast is great. Thank you for asking.
Episode 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
Molly and Pete Save Christmas, WGN Radio.
Christmas at Pemberley Manor was the last one.
And for those wondering, like myself, if there were going to be any scarf mentions, there were. So you must tune in and listen.
What's Christmas like at Pemberley?
Christmas at Pemberley Manor is just a magical place. It's mm-hmm. It's a big on the outskirts of New York or Washington D.C.
Okay.
It's just a wonderful Christmas place that's going to be shut down and turned into condos by a billionaire.
Thus,
hot shot.
The tension.
Ooh. Yeah.
So the
thankfully
villain is
the man didn't win. Probably.
Well, we don't know. That's why you got to listen.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why you got to listen. We don't know if the man won or not.
Right.
All right, what is on the Christmas with Pete agenda today? Musically.
Well, we got to do our trivia.
Oh, I forgot about the trivia. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, I've screwed up the order here.
Because you're going to get a $100 gift card to Tree Time in Barrington.
Well, not me.
No, but the listener, if they know the answer to our Christmas trivia question.
All right, the Christmas trivia question for that $100 gift card to Tree Time is what?
In the In Excelsis Deo episode... Yeah. Of The West Wing. Season 1, Episode 10, original air date, December 15th, 1999. Toby Ziegler, the White House communications director, he gets called into President Bartlett's office because he did something he absolutely should not have done.
What got him in trouble?
What did he do to upset the president?
I don't know one of the answers.
No, it is not.
Okay, because that's where I am.
You don't think about the West Wing being, holiday-ish, but their Thanksgiving episodes are second to none. They got a classic.
Actually, no, I mean, you're the Christmas guy, but I always think of the White House as very Christmassy.
Yeah, I guess, you're right. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and the First Lady has in the past traditionally been the one to decorate it up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll be that way this year. We'll see. I don't remember. Was Christmas a big deal last year in the Trump White House?
I don't remember. Well, they had a kid, Barron. He's into Christmas, right?
Trump doesn't know that.
Oh.
All right, so the question again is, in the episode, In Excelsis Deo,
yep.
what got Josh in trouble with the president.
Toby.
With the president?
Toby.
Oh, Toby in trouble with the president.
Yep.
Okay. All right. First correct
what,
caller.
What was the air date on this?
December 15th. 1999.
Great yeah. year.
This is one of the first years I knew Pete, and I remember him talking up the West Wing Christmas Non-stop. Episode, and I was like, this guy's a weirdo.
This is an outstanding... This is one of the greatest holiday episodes.
So 20 years later, what do you...
I know.
How do you feel?
It still stands
That's a great
the same.
Series. A great
he and
series.
This other guy on our show, though, they would talk about the West Wing like it was like, the most groundbreaking show that ever is.
312-981-7200 is the number. All right, musically.
All right, so today... We're honoring veterans. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to come up with perhaps a holiday classic that mentions veterans. Slim pickings.
Well, surprising.
Slim pickings.
But they're probably, especially in World War One, there's famous stories about, there's a very famous story, maybe this is where you're going, so I apologize if it is, about Silent Night being sung across the trenches in hand-to-hand combat in World War One, and they agreed to stop fighting for I don't know how many hours until the following morning, and they took Christmas off, and they both the both sides sang Silent Night together. Very famous story.
Oh no, I did. I'm gonna have to add that to my.
Can I get like an associate producer credit for yeah, Christmas?
You can. Yeah, I'm gonna have to add this for yeah, sure. for next year.
Yeah. But that's not what you're talking about. What do you have?
So I couldn't really find anything. I found a couple of things were kind of hokey. But so I'm going to go with this song is from the probably if you were going to own one Christmas album, you know, if you just want to have one Christmas album in your mm-hmm. collection, this is the one to get. It's the Phil Spector Christmas album.
Oh, sure.
A Christmas Gift for You.
The Wall of Sound.
This song by the Crystals, Parade of the Wooden Soldiers.
All right, here. Very nice. Very nice. Have I asked you yet what your favorite Christmas song is? You want to save that for closer to the holidays? Can you tell us now?
My favorite song probably would be the Pogues.
That's a good song.
Fairy Tale of New York.
Yeah, it's a great song.
There's a text for 847. Garth Brooks sings song called Bella Wood about the story at World War One. But I'm guessing Pete does not acknowledge Garth Brooks as an artist.
When I was looking, I know I do. I acknowledge Chris Gaines, but not
Ah, sure. sure.
The there were a couple of country-ish Christmas
Choices,
songs
options?
That I just felt kind. They were kind of hokey. It would do a disservice to this to our veterans.
All right, well,
they
enough.
Need something better.
Right.
All right. Item number three on Christmas, Pete.
That would be things to do. This holiday season, and what I like to do, as Michael Scott mentioned in one of the Christmas episodes, the best things about Christmas, one of the best things about Christmas is you can get drunk and nobody can say anything.
Right.
So I'm going to recommend.
He looked at Dave, just so everyone listening. He paused and looked at Dave.
I did look at Dave.
Yeah, what was that about?
Sorry about that, Dave. So I'm going to recommend a couple of Christmas bars to go to that are all decked
out sure,
in holiday regalia. Of course, Butch McGuire's right downtown on Division Street. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. You must make a visit at some point.
And this
November
is the year. Yeah, we were talking about that. The guy who usually does the decorations, he passed away this year.
No.
He passed away back in May or June.
Do you just... Poor
I know.
Pete is
yeah,
not taking it back.
Is somebody going to pick up the slack?
No, someone will pick up the slack, but it'll be also...
That's how you find out. He couldn't break it to you a little more gently?
It also may be emotional, meaning that, you know, they pick up the slack and they honor the dude who was doing it for so many years.
Yeah. They have a train. They have a train right. that, like, circles the perimeter of the bar.
They keep it.
Simon's Tavern, an old tavern in Andersonville, also highly decked out. And Lost Lake, which is a new cocktail bar, not new, but a couple years old in Logan Square. They do a Christmas pop-up every year and have very
and
exciting cocktail
drinks. And we noticed this last year,
drinks.
Too, that there's more and the idea of like the bars downtown doing a two-week pop-up. There's a lot of bar pop-ups that are happening that
What's that big
don't
Mardi Gras bar That one Bourbon Street did a big Christmas pop-up.
Yeah, that's like a go-to now. But these are legit. These are the authentic.
Yeah, do you have to go to all of them as your duties as Christmas?
I do have to go to all of them, yeah.
Understandable. Yeah. Julie thinks she has the answer. Before I get to that, here's the story of the Christmas truce, just so I fill in my own facts. Hostilities in the fifth month of World War I had entered somewhat of a lull as both sides reconsidered their strategies in the race to the sea. But in the week leading up to the 25th, the French, German, and British soldiers crossed trenches to exchange seasonal greetings and talk. Now, keep in mind, these people are shooting at each other. In some areas, men from both sides ventured into no man's land on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day to mingle and exchange food and souvenirs. There were joint burial ceremonies and prisoner swaps, while several meetings ended in carol singing, and the most famous being Silent Night. Men played games of football slash soccer with one another. One of the most memorable images of the truce is that, commemorized in a famous painting and black and white photography of an early time. The truces tended to dwindle away in the remaining years of the war because of orders from high command who said, no more truces! Enough with the truces! But the power of Christmas in 1914. It's a nice story.
Yeah.
On Veterans Day.
Yeah.
You want to hear from Julie?
Christmas compels you.
Let's hear if she's got it.
Julie, do you have the answer to the question?
I think I do. I believe he, without permission, invoked the office of the president in order to assist a homeless veteran.
Hi. Yes, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, sir.
Apparently, I've arranged for an honor guard for somebody.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
No. Just tell me, is there anything else I've arranged for? We're still in NATO, right?
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
This man died last night, a Korean War veteran who was wearing a coat I gave to the Goodwill. It had my card in it.
Toby, you're not responsible.
An hour and 20 minutes for the ambulance to get there. A Lance Corporal, United States Marine Corps, 2nd of the 7th. I got better treatment in Panmunjom.
Toby, if we start pulling strings like this, you don't think every homeless veteran will come out of the woodwork?
I can only hope, sir.
Ding, ding, ding! Mm.
Waterworks.
Powerful.
It was a wonderful episode. It brought tears to your eyes.
Yeah, very powerful. Julie, congratulations. You've won a trip to the North Pole and a weekend with Santa Claus and the Bells. What did she win? Oh, $100
gift card. She's winning a $100 gift card to Tree Time with the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere, Steve. Everything Christmas.
Thanks very much.
Everything Christmas at Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington.
And before I let you go, Julie, for your loved ones who are listening now, what do you want for Christmas? One thing you want for Christmas, what would it be?
I want them all to be healthy.
There you go. Such a mom. Such
I thought you were going to say Nintendo Switch.
Such a mom.
No.
All right, Julie, hold on so we can get the information from you. Christmas Pete, do you have some standardized out for this? Because I feel like you should have. Reporting live from Santa's headquarters.
Reporting live from Santa's headquarters. This is Christmas Pete.
Yeah.
Until Wednesday.
You need something like, make every Christmas a Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Like that. Oh,
yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we all point out that Steve stayed home on Friday just to get out of eating the elf spaghetti sundae we all had eaten?
I thought I was sick when I woke up. Imagine what that would have done to me.
Oh.
It's sweet.
I think it's
still in the garbage can in our offices.
I figured that's where you got it from before you started.
Justin claimed to have an instant sugar high. He was like, crazy. I'm going crazy here.
I got the shakes.
Yeah, I got the shakes thinking about it. Thank you, Christmas.
Thank you.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Texters chiming in. They're all Christmased up now. One texter, Father Christmas by the Kinks. Great song. Also rumored, this is a 317, that it was 24 hours for the Christmas truce. They played soccer, shared chocolate, as I said. That's from a teacher, Brian. I'll Be Home for Christmas from the 312 is a perfect song for vets. It's about wanting to get home during the war. Always makes me cry. 847, one more part of the story of singing Silent Night was the two regiments who sang couldn't return to fighting. Both sides have met each other, and they couldn't continue to fight. A great movie about Christmas is called It Happened on Fifth Avenue. Delightful Christmas movie. Steve, check it out. Christmas 1915 by Celtic Thunder tells the story of a frontline ceasefire at Christmas. And on it goes.
Celtic Thunder, that dance group with the feet. Boom, 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 boom.
Is it?
Boom.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know your Celtic Thunder.
Oh, what is that? Like Michael Flatley. Yeah, isn't he Celtic Thunder?
Yeah. I don't know.
Am I confusing that?
No, you could well be right. And a couple of people texted about the Google Midway Village Museum. about Christmas in the trenches. The Midway Village in Rockford performs a wonderful reenactment of the Christmas Eve truce in December as well. All worth seeing. If you love somebody who's a veteran on Veterans Day, obviously you remember them all year long, but it's the right day to pause and stop and remember those who served. Anybody on the show want to mention somebody from their family? My father, Ralph Cochran, Staff Sergeant, Army Air Force, before it was the Air Force, was a cook, thought he'd gotten through the war without having to deal with the really ugly stuff, and he ended up in Saipan in Guam with a small group of guys going around trying to clear out caves of Japanese soldiers who didn't know the war was over.
Oof.
Wow. Ralph Cochran. Happy Veterans Day.
Yeah.
Dave, how about you?
Well, my dad was in the service. He was not in combat, in World War II in the Air Force.
Must have been before the Air Force, because that's my father as well. The Army Air Corps. And then they became the Air Force after the war. The Air Force itself wasn't formalized, I think, until like 1948.
Yeah, I guess that's what it probably was, yes.
Yeah.
Stationed out in California in San Rafael, around San Rafael, California.
It's not a bad gig.
Mm. No.
Yeah, it's okay.
It wasn't bad.
Anybody else?
Yeah, my dad was a drill sergeant during the Vietnam era, and he...
You grew up with a drill sergeant father.
But drill sergeant by day, hippie by night.
Oh, okay.
So it's like,
okay.
I feel like I got best of both worlds. And my grandfather was, as you guys were just saying, I don't think they call it Air Force at the time. And then my buddy Tommy Pritchard, who came in this weekend we had a big Veterans Day celebration for his... he was a soldier in Iraq, so he... came through. He used to live in Chicago. He now lives in Colorado.
And he also, turns out, he heckles people that karaoke poorly.
Yeah, we found out it's morally unacceptable. Society standards say you cannot boo at karaoke night.
Well, this is a deeper...
Maybe had they known if he was a veteran, they would have allowed it.
No, but now this is a deeper story, because you had guys come in for a guy's weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you planned this.
I did not plan this.
But one of the main events was
karaoke.
Guys getting together to do karaoke. Yep. You guys
at the
crazy.
Hidden Cove. And my buddy Tommy had done too many songs, so they kind of cut him off. And then he was getting angry that they weren't calling his song, his new one. And then what happened was a group of women were doing somber songs. They were doing like the Smiths. And he determined that was the right time to boo, which didn't go over well with their spouses and significant others.
No heckling during karaoke.
It's a safe space. We all determined this yesterday. We all agreed, and Tommy apologized.
You guys are lucky you didn't get beat up.
Yeah, he was like, I was wrong. And we all said, yeah, you were. So,
texters continue to come in. 847, I'd like to honor my father-in-law, Joe Vanderberg, served in World War II in the Philippines. Let's see. There's some more stuff here that I want to get to. Harley Lake, Army Air Corps as well. Roy Phillips, World War II, Normandy, 2 Purple Hearts, Colonel Robert H., World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. Rest in peace. Miss you every day. Roy Phillips, World War II, Normandy. Oh, that's what I mentioned, Roy. And Harley Lake Sr. I want to make sure I get the name right. Army Air Corps. There you go. So there you go. Just a few to mention on this Veterans Day. Any karaoke scheduled for this weekend?
No, I think I'm done with the karaoke for a while.
Okay. And again, if we learned anything from this show today, it's don't heckle the karaoke.
Karaoke is a safe space.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
That's
what we've learned.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
It's 9:42. As you probably know, if you listen to the show anyway, with any regularity, I'm an adoptee. I was adopted by my mom and dad when I was 3 days old. And it is an amazing, wonderful thing that we do. And, you know, it's a cliche, but it's true. Anybody can have a kid, or at least almost anybody, but people that go through the process of adoption really want to have a kid. And it's an invasive process. It's an expensive process. It's time consuming. And it's unbelievably rewarding. So if you're an adoptive parent, let me start with thank you for that. I've got a couple of people here in studio who also have taken it to the next next level with foster care, and they're going to explain a little bit about the tie between adoption and foster care and why it's so important in National Adoption Month. So meet Bob and Wendy Noonan. Bob is the chairman of the board of directors for Let It Be Us. We'll tell you what that is in just a second. And Wendy's a court-appointed special advocate for Lake County. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
It's nice to see you.
Thanks, Steve.
You.
Appreciate it.
And Let It Be Us, I should say. Ross will be on later. My son, Ross, will be on later this week to talk about it. But he and his wife, Lauren, my daughter-in-law, they got started in foster care because of Let It Be Us.
Yes, yeah. Actually, I think your son, Ross, was at one of our Finding Forever family events down in Joliet last year. So, and I remember chatting with him after I was emceeing that event for Let It Be Us.
And now they're fostering.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's awesome. That's incredible.
Give me some background on you guys. I mean, you have kids. You've got a busy family life. What got you started in fostering or got you aware of
it? Yeah, that's a great question. I'll have Wendy expand on it. I like to joke that we're biological empty nesters. But we've started all over again because right now we have our fourth and fifth kids or children are 6 and 7 years old. But our bio kids are 27, 25, and 23.
One of them's on the phone, by the way.
Oh, yes. Oh, good. Melanie's on.
Melanie's on the phone. And while you guys were off playing radio with me this morning, she was putting the little... Is it brother and sister?
Yes.
No, two brothers.
Little brothers getting them ready for school. Good morning, Melanie.
Hi, good morning.
I shouldn't say school because everybody's off today, including you. You're a teacher?
Yeah, I teach in CPS, but my little brothers had school in the suburbs.
Oh, they
actually.
Did? Okay.
Yeah.
So how old were you when mom and dad came to you and said, what would you think if we brought home a couple of new kiddos?
We started when I was, I believe, a sophomore in high school. So mm-hmm. I was 15 or 16 years old.
And that's a fair time to be selfish in life and want to make it all about you.
Especially dad's little princess and the baby.
Yes,
family.
Yes, yes. So did it rock your world or did you go, no, that's mom and dad?
I was actually over the moon excited to start. I'm really similar to my mom and my dad in the fact that I like helping out and I love younger kids. And I honestly wasn't that upset because at the time I was the only kid home. My brothers were in college. So it took a lot of attention off me, which was actually nice when I was in high school.
Right, she could sneak out at night and do what she was planning on doing. Well, Melanie, one of the reasons I want to bring that up, and Bob, you can speak to this as well, is for people that go, I can't do it. I can't foster. I can't adopt. I'll turn my house upside down. Give your kids some credit.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I think it's expanded our horizon and realizing, we didn't go out looking to adopt kids, but we did hear, hey, there's a big need out there. And so we started just taking temporary custody of a lot of kids with the goal of getting them reunited with their biological family.
Well, first you had to become qualified to do that, though.
There's a licensing
yes.
procedure.
Yes, oh, very good. Yes, yeah. There is you do have to realize, hey, we're going to make this step, and there is qualifications and licenses for good reason. So.
And does Illinois do pretty well with that? With all the criticism we give to the state of Illinois, the process to becoming foster parents, is it pretty good?
It is pretty good. I mean, it's needed for sure. I mean, they do a good job. I guess what we need to do is identify foster parents or people that want to come in and say, "Hey, I'm going to put a little skin in the game," because there is training that's required. Certification needed, but there's a huge need for really good foster families coming in to take kids because there's so many kids in Illinois foster care
sure.
right now. There's
right.
around 18,000.
18,000?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wendy, you mentioned, and Bob, you just mentioned training. When we say the word training, you think about training, you think, well, is it a parenting training? What goes into training and certification to be foster eligible?
A lot of the training is parenting. Even though we were parents, we went through the training. There's a lot of training involved around things that the kids may have experienced that we may not be aware of, like trauma or things kids have witnessed, how to deal with those problems. A lot of training on education, getting them into the proper school system and mainstreaming them into school, and training on how to deal with their biological family and, you know, the parameters of all of that.
Let me ask you something in reverse order here because it's sort of the end part of this, but one of the concerns I've heard many, many times is for people saying fostering, I could never give the kid back. The child comes into my home, I don't know how to say goodbye to them, you know, whether they're with me. What do you do to intellectualize that?
You have to do it. You have to go into it with an open mind and an open heart and realize that whatever amount of time you have that child, even if it is 3 or 4 months, you hopefully made some sort of a difference that they will take with them.
And the best case scenario is a child returns to their biological parents who are now healthy enough to take care of them, right?
Exactly. Getting the right counseling, getting the right, becoming healthier.
Mm-hmm. And I know, look, DCFS gets wrapped, but the vast majority of people at DCFS are working their tails off to do the right thing every single day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But I will say that the state or the government cannot raise children.
Right.
And that's where we need, a child just needs unconditional love and guidance.
Melanie, you're a teacher, so you must love kids, but tell me about your little brothers.
My little brothers are probably my favorite people in the entire world.
Oh, including your mom and dad. Look at you.
It was special because my dad travels for work, so my mom and I are home alone a lot when I was living at home in high school. So I got to see the ins and outs of helping raise them, especially. We brought Kevin, the youngest, we brought him home from the hospital. And so being there from the beginning until now, I feel like I just have a really special bond with them, and they care a lot about me, and they always try to take care of me, too. So it's really special.
How sweet is that? Yeah.
Except for when she came home from college, they're like, you left, and this is not your house or your mom and dad anymore.
We took the room.
Yeah, that's what they said.
They didn't want me to come back.
Melanie, I'm sure you'd straighten them out. Thanks for calling, by the way. Hold the line for just a second, and we'll come back and talk more about this. It's National Adoption Month. LetItBeUs.org, a great place to start for information.
Absolutely, yes.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
November, National Adoption Month, talking with Bob and Wendy Noonan, and talking about, amongst other things, Let It Be Us, LetItBeUs.org, a great way for you to get information to lead you down that road to possible fostering and adoption. What is the length, Bob, between the link between fostering and adoption? In other words, when you foster, you don't necessarily adopt, right?
No.
That's the important difference?
Yes, correct. Exactly.
Sorry, microphone.
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You. That wasn't you, it was me.
So when you become a foster parent, you do not have to adopt. In fact, one of the goals is to take temporary custody of kids and give them some, parenting, unconditional love and guidance with the intent of bringing them back or sending them back to their bio.
That's always the goal, right? The goal is healthy parents. Yes.
But if you look at the statistics, unfortunately, greater than 50% of the kids that are end up brought in care by the state don't return to their bio.
But if somebody wants to get into fostering and they're concerned because they don't think I can adopt and they don't want to feel guilty because they can't take a child who needs to be adopted, the program understands that, right?
Exactly, yes. And in fact, you can put your toe in the water and get licensed and become RESPIS, where you may just take kids for a short amount of time.
If really important thing.
Yeah, right. If somebody's going on a vacation and for some reason needs somebody to for a week-long stay for their kids they're fostering.
Because they need a break. Yeah,
exactly. So there's a lot of different avenues people can take that want to support kids in foster care.
Now, Wendy, through no fault of their own, a lot of these kids are fetal alcoholic, or they've just gone through hell, or they've been in a domestic violence situation. And there are a lot of well-meaning folks who go, I don't know if I can take that on. I don't know what to do. Along with the training they get, what do you say to those people?
Well, there's a lot of support systems in place. As soon as you take a child in your home, and actually all the children that are in the system is no fault of their own. Not one child gets there because they did something wrong. But if you take a child in, for instance, even kids that are handicapped or autistic or anything, there are services in place. There is therapies in place. They come with a medical card, so there's no cost out of pocket for medication, for dentistry, all of those type of things.
And there are no stupid questions. Once you're in the program, there's a network of help.
There is a network of help. And there's a lot of support, parent support groups that are fabulous resources for new foster parents.
There's nothing you'll experience that someone else hasn't already experienced that you can pick up the phone or get online to talk to them. All right, I got less than a minute here, and I want you to talk about Let It Be Us. What do people need to do?
Well, Let It Be Us, for sure, go to our website, letitbeus.org. We were an advocacy group that came together that were either foster parents or adoptive parents that realized, hey, there's a lot of things that we can do to help the state and help DCFS. So we started as an advocacy group that are looking to fill holes in the system and really focus in on the welfare of the kids. Because
everything that I don't mean to cut you off, but everything that Ross has said about it, and Lauren, you're doing a fabulous job. Here's what I want to do. I want to have you guys back to talk more about Let It Be Us as this week goes on. But I got a break here.
Okay, great.
On 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
What are you doing?
I can't get this microphone.
You notice that too?
I'm sorry.
Here's what I'm hearing.
No, I hit my mic off, but I can't. This microphone needs to be adjusted.
Well, congratulations.
It's Mr. Haney. Microphone, not your attitude that needs to be adjusted.
If you remember Green Acres, the Monroe brothers were working in the corner.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so sorry to be a distraction.
Pearl Mortgage, an equal housing lender, Illinois residential mortgage licensee, 4358, NMLS number 191860. Did you guys hear about Justin's wild weekend?
Yeah, crazy.
He had karaoke? Boys in for karaoke.
Wow.
There was some, we were talking about the social implication and the morally unacceptable behavior of booing at
You're
karaoke.
Supposed to.
I would make the argument maybe it's morally unacceptable for your buddies to come in and you have karaoke night.
My friend was booing someone else on the karaoke.
Oh.
You don't do that.
Yeah, we agreed. Everyone agreed. He agreed, too. He gave a mea culpa.
So you had friends over and you karaoke'd?
Yeah, we went
Steve,
to
that's
karaoke.
The point, Steve Bertrand. That's what I'm talking about.
It's like Hangover 4.
I'm sorry, can I boo?
It was a
I love karaoke.
He was not booing because of their performance. He was booing for their choice of song.
But do you understand that you had guys in and you had a bachelor... No, you had guys in. You had a bachelorette party. That's what you did.
I don't know.
Was it Nathan Lane's birthday? Why did you guys do that?
It's a good time, though. It's good. It was a long night. It was a long night.
Yeah. What are you guys doing today?
I don't know. I haven't looked yet.
Oh, I got your hammer out and your toolkit, rebuilding the studio some more.
We'll talk a little bit about the Magnificent Mile Lights Festival. The chairman of that's coming up, and we're all going to karaoke.
By the way, I like a crossover from one show to another where you ask and somebody goes, I don't know. I haven't looked yet.
I'm worried about the microphone. That's what I'm working on right now.
Obsessive Wendy and her friend Bill coming up in just a second, and we'll see you tomorrow.